Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It's Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Jhené Egbuamoke off today. We said she's in the middle of training camp right now. She's getting ready for an NBA season. She is a bona fide stud and a professional athlete. And so Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio from 7 to 9 Eastern, kind enough to join us here today in her place. A
bona fide stud and athlete, right? Like, we just traded athlete for athlete here?
I can't tell you, Jason, I mean, what a stark downgrade it is from Jhené to really any of us. Like,
yeah, that's
that goes for me, too, but you just have to sit in the same chair as Jason right now, as Jason Pitts is now being fonted on ESPN
yes.
Plus.
Thank you.
Because Jason Fitz not only is saying that apparently he can go in here and fill the big shoes of Jhené Egbuamoke, but also saying that he has now compared himself to top draft prospect Kyle Pitts in his versatility.
You said it subconsciously. Freudian just sort of slipped out when you called me Jason Pitts, and I thought it was a compliment. You were letting me know that you appreciate my versatility and that I'd be a top two or three pick in the draft of ESPN.
Yeah, no, not quite, Jason. I was actually thinking of the open of the show much more liken you to the, like, sports talk radio version of a spork.
Oh, okay.
Like, that seems much more your speed and your brand, truthfully.
I'm not out on a spork. In fact, if they could give me, like, a really fancy spork, like, go to a nice restaurant, go to a great steakhouse, and get my dessert with the spork, I'd take that all day long. I don't want a plastic spork, though. Give me, like, you know, proper silverware
spork.
Well,
I think especially if you're going to get, like, a nice cheesecake, I could argue that a spork is the best utensil to eat that with, because maybe I don't want a full-blown fork in that situation. There's some whipped cream stuff. I want to be able to move around some of the top parts of this cheesecake, but also be able to pierce through, especially when you get to the crust.
And look, and let's just be real, the question mark always around mac and cheese. Do you eat it with a spoon or a fork, depending on where you're from?
Yeah.
Like, we end all that. You just get your fancy truffle mac with a spork. I'm solving America's problems here.
Listen, restaurants.
You're welcome.
Swallow a little of your pride and your hoity-toityness and just go out here and give us the high-end spork that we need. Yeah. Jhené Golic Jr. here just trying to solve all your problems. Mike Golic Jr. and Jason Fitz. But Jason, I want to get to something we heard on the morning show earlier today. Mm-hmm. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, and this is Keyshawn Johnson, one of the co-hosts of that show, they brought up something that we're seeing right now because, unfortunately, the Knicks' illustrious win streak came to an end. And our producer, Shannon, who's a diehard Knicks fan, had the audacity to ask me, how am I supposed to feel about this? Are we supposed to feel bad now? And I said, no, you're in very much smile because it happened mode with the way this Knicks season has gone.
Sure.
But it spawned a larger conversation about the what-ifs around this, because the Knicks being, air quotes, back, I mean, in the way that we always... The Knicks, if you look at the celebrations outside of MSG, it kind of feels that way right now. And so it brought up this conversation and this take from Keyshawn Johnson asking about, as we look into New York, as we look at, all right, the Knicks and the Nets, which team would you rather be a part of winning it all? Here's what Keyshawn had to say.
If they win in Brooklyn as the Nets and they win a championship, It won't have the same gravitas as winning as a Knick.
Not even close.
See, I want the Knick stuff. I don't want the Net stuff. I want to be at the top of the Empire State Building as a Knick with a Knick jersey on, opposed to being in just a high rise as a Brooklyn Net.
Jason, you had a very visceral reaction to
this
take.
That's a trash take. Look, you win a championship, you win a championship. That's all that matters. And let me just go back to, it was March 24th, 2006. March 24th, 2006, it's a great article on ESPN.com from the Associated Press about how one Keyshawn Johnson elected to sign a contract to play with the Carolina Panthers because his buddy, Steve Smith, convinced him that's where he needed to come to at that point in his career. And in fact, it references in that very article that he bypassed the New York Football Giants to go to the Carolina Panthers. So Keyshawn suddenly holding all of these NBA guys to a different... He wants to stay. When he had the opportunity, he wanted to go play for his friends and with his friends and get paid. That's what athletes want to do. It doesn't matter in the moment if you're winning your championship or not. You just think you're going to go win your championship with your buddy and get paid, which is what Keyshawn did in 2006. He went and got paid, played with his buddies, didn't play with the Giants, who have more veritas.
I mean, all right, well, Jason Fitz with a bit of gotcha journalism.
Boom!
Here.
I'm a journalist too, Kyle Pitts. Let's go.
going back into the vault to try and prove Keyshawn wrong. But
it's
Jason,
a greater point to me. Like, you win a championship, you win a championship. Who does it mean more to? It means more to the media. It means more to talking heads like us. It means more, as Sarah always says on Spain, if it's to bloviated gas bags. Like, we could talk about the Knicks all day long. And yeah, maybe we don't talk about the Nets the same way we talk about the Knicks. But for an athlete that's making a decision where he wants to play and how to win a championship, the gravitas of that shouldn't be about the franchise. It should be about where I think I can have my best moment to go win and go have the opportunity to do it the way I want with an organization that I like in a way that I can win a championship. And what it means to everybody else can't be that significant to me.
No, but Jason, I would say this is, you're right. As an athlete, all you want to do is to be able to get to that ultimate prize. Like, it's not going to lessen the experience for anyone involved. But it's different the way you're remembered in different places. Meaning, yeah, Kevin Durant, if he goes and adds another title to his trophy case here, Kyrie Irving, if James Harden gets his first, the way I always put it is, how are you going to look at the billing for all this? If that trio wins it in Brooklyn, it's going to be James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant win a championship. They beat the NBA. If that same trio was wearing blue and orange, it would be the Big Three and the Knicks. The Knicks win a championship. That franchise would get equal billing on the way that we celebrate this. And just based on what we always see and what seems obvious, and I remember hearing Jalen Rose say this on Jalen and Jacoby, he's been trying to tell people until he's blue in the face that New York is so still overwhelmingly a Knicks town. And so you can't tell me that the effect in that city, the way you're remembered as a champion around that franchise and its fans, it's going to change the way it's received. To me, it's obvious. It doesn't lessen the accomplishment of the experience, but how we look at it, how it's remembered and celebrated, that is controlled by some of the outside parties, and that's going to look a lot different.
Yeah, but at some point, you also have to say, okay, if the guys have made a different decision and decide to play with the Knicks, they'd be playing in a completely different pressure cooker. With a completely, I said years ago when people were talking about the Knicks, like, if you have a bad game for the Nets, you walk into a pizza place, the guy isn't going to not give you pizza. You have a bad game for the Knicks, you walk into, like, depending on where you are in New York, he may or may not decide he wants to give you that slice, right? Like, New York Knicks fans are hardcore. They are edgy. Everything about it is a pressure cooker. We can't even assure that these guys, had they decided to play with the Knicks, would have the same level of success because the variables around them would be completely different. It's no different than saying the Bears should have drafted Patrick Mahomes, presuming he'd be the same Patrick Mahomes. You can't make that presumption.
Well, no, but again, it's changing the argument. It's not saying that the variables wouldn't be different. It's that what would come on the other side of it would be celebrated in a way that's different and would be celebrated in a way that makes you much more, I think, of a celebrated figure in that city. If you win one with the Knicks, you're a star in New York in a way that, listen, Kevin Durant is probably always going to be,
yeah,
right?
Is KD walking into a nightclub and not getting interrupted right now?
Kevin Durant's always going to be the guy, but I would say this is, if you're a guy that's a little bit further down the roster and you win it as a Knick, there's a higher chance of you being someone that the fans, especially in that city, are going to look at and forever look at you and say, that guy's a lifelong Knick that helped bring us a championship. It's not just going to happen because the veracity around the Brooklyn fan base just isn't the same. It's not even close.
But the NBA and its fandom is so based on players specifically. To me, the most important thing for James Harden right now doesn't need to be where he wins a championship. It's that he erases the memory of, as Sarah always says, forgetting how to basketball in Game 7, right?
Yes.
Like, he's got to get that. It doesn't matter where he gets that. That's way more important than anything. And in 10 years, when everybody's looking back at it, yeah, Knicks fans who are loud are going to forever say, hey, you want it here. You never have to buy a drink in this town. But the NBA culture that only talks about championships won will value that Brooklyn championship the same, I believe, over the course of time.
It's, you know, I think actually it'd be a more interesting conversation to have around the Yankees or the Mets.
Oh.
Because you do the same rabid fan base there, a place, yeah, in New York where the Yankees got a million championships, you're a drop in the bucket there amongst a list of names that are probably all better than you, versus a Mets franchise that's the perpetual butt of so many jokes. But when you go back to those teams in the 80s and all the characters on there that, listen, probably more well-known for what happened off the field in those instances, it's a different kind of folklore that I think you can build. So it's just interesting to look, especially in cities that have two big teams like that. The Cubs championship for Chicago, way different than the way you talk about anything the White Sox are going to do in guaranteed rate outside of basically the normal city limits.
Cubs-White Sox, great example, Mike, and you're totally right about that. I think the one thing that separates the NBA to me is that so much of it is about individuality and not about the teams they play for. That's how we remember legacy of the players.
It is. It's how we definitely change the conversation around the NBA as a whole. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. If you want to have a conversation around the NFL draft, any of your draft questions, again, Jason Fitz and I getting ready to host digital draft coverage for ESPN starting on Thursday. Jason is teeming with draft knowledge that he wants to shout at somebody. You can be that somebody. 888-SAY-ESPN. And so coming up next, we want to get to, and we've talked and we said, just don't ask us about the third overall pick. Don't ask us about Mac Jones. But we got to have a conversation around Jimmy Garoppolo because we had some eye-opening statements from the brass of the 49ers that's called into question a familiar conversation about Jimmy Garoppolo's future. We'll tell you what that future looks like next. Chenan Golick Jr., Mike Golick Jr., and Jason Fitz on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chenan and Golick Jr., the podcast.
I'm very excited to get into some draft notes in about 10 minutes. We've been taking you guys a position-by-position breakdown heading into the upcoming NFL draft here on Chenan Golick Jr. on ESPN Radio. And we got Jason Fitz sitting in for Chenan today. Chenan off conquering the world, this time on court, getting ready, training camp with the LA Sparks. But Jason, you've been getting ready for the NFL draft coming up, so I'll be curious what you think of some of the draft notes that we've got as we talk about big boy talk with the D-line today.
Oh, is it all going to be big boy talk with you? Like, do you like quarterbacks or receivers anymore, or do you only like the big guys?
Jason, listen, I've had to talk about these quarterbacks ad nauseum for far too long. And we did wide receivers. We did defensive backs. Hell, we did running backs and linebackers already in our position preview. You just have the dignity, the honor of being here for the Fats.
I think the defensive line, the Fats, the dominoes as they will fall, Fats, dominoes, see what I did there? As those dominoes fall will be one of the most interesting things of the draft because you have a combination of uncertainty about opt-outs for what it means for some of these guys. Some of these guys who looked far different when they went in for their pro days and their weigh-ins than they did the last time we saw them on tape. Nobody knows how that's going to translate over. Like, I think particularly trying to figure out how to address your defensive line in this year's draft is going to be very difficult.
Yes, it's very much, and I've almost said this for the line in the draft, but it's kind of like the ice cream draft. It's whatever flavor you're really into as a franchise. We're going to see more of that this year. Less groupthink than ever because of all of the distance between parts in this. Now, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting your business with specialized coverages for your commercial vehicles. More at progressivecommercial.com. One of the things that was, I thought, a fascinating takeaway from the 49ers press conference yesterday, where we heard from their GM, John Lynch, and we heard from their head coach, Kyle Shanahan, was how quickly the tune on Jimmy Garoppolo changed from a month ago to Jimmy's our guy. It was very similar to the Josh Rosen meme or the template that got put out by the Cardinals. He's our guy. And then a month later, we have this conversation being had by Kyle Shanahan, 49ers head coach, at their press conference talking about the quarterbacks that he likes potentially at the third spot and what the future holds for Jimmy.
We made a decision in this process that we felt we needed to get a starting quarterback this year and add that to our team. There were five guys that we felt that we'd be okay with taking. You know, we knew that there was three at the time exactly. That's why we thought three was a good spot to go to. After going through this whole process, I feel good about five guys at three. We had a guy probably at first back then, but we knew that wasn't set in stone.
Can you say with certainty that Jimmy Garoppolo will be on the roster on Sunday?
I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive Sunday, so I can't guarantee who will be on our roster on Sunday.
And again, I'm here for nihilist Kyle Shanahan. We are all potentially on the slow march to death, and we just need to accept that. But if we're not going to do the nihilist bit, Jason, where are you at then on Jimmy Garoppolo and the possibility of moving him? Like, are we going to have this Patriots conversation again with Jimmy G in the reunion special there?
I think that Jimmy G is going to be moved, but I don't think it's this year. I mean, what the San Francisco 49ers have done at this point is they've played chess while the rest of us are playing checkers. They went out and they resisted the temptation to overdraft the several years they've had the opportunity at quarterback, and instead they've gotten themselves great defensive playmakers. They built an entire roster that's very good top to bottom. They have one position that is particularly, I won't even say a weakness, but it is their failing right now, and that's Jimmy G and their belief in him as a quarterback. But if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm looking around saying, as a coach, I know the one thing I can fix is a quarterback. So let me get everything else fixed, and then I'll figure out the quarterback. I think that's smart strategy. So now they go out, they draft themselves somebody at three overall, and depending on who they draft, they have a great situation where they can let that person come in, and if he can win the job, great. If he doesn't win the job and he spends a year learning a la Patrick Mahomes under Alex Smith, that's great too. Jimmy G isn't going to cost them so much this year that they're not ready to handle it. So why not protect yourself as long as you can? Keep Jimmy G as your quarterback. Make sure that you can still win today and then easily transition into whoever's going to be starting for you next year. I think that's what makes the most sense.
I think he'd be a great transition quarterback. And you're right. He's even like a dollar store Alex Smith in the way that you could approach him, because they pointed out, Kyle Shanahan, everyone mentioned this talking about Jimmy, it's more been injury for him. They've pointed to all the stats we've seen where when he's on the field, they're a winning football team. It's just that he hasn't been on the field as consistently as they like for their starter. And so Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch went up and started the clock for themselves. I'm with you to the Patriots thing. If we're going to sit here and say that the Patriots and Bill Belichick are never going to trade up, that's not what they do in the draft. They're going to sit at 15 and either take someone there or trade back. They're not going to get involved in all of our quarterback fantasies. What's the formula for that franchise? Bring players in, draft them, whatever they do, have them perform really well, let someone else go pay them, and then if they want to bring them back on the cheap, a la what they're getting ready to try and do with Trent Brown as a reclamation, what they did with Jamie Collins in the past at linebacker, you're going to bring Jimmy G back at $25 million a year, whatever you're going to owe him. Like, that doesn't seem like the Patriot way in a lot of this, even for a guy that we know Bill Belichick's love affair kind of created what was out there, the conversation and the discomfort with him and Brady about his future because of Jimmy G being there.
If you're the Patriots on draft day and you're watching Justin Fields just slide and you realize that you can trade up and get Justin Fields or you can stay where you are and try and get Jimmy G later, what are you doing?
Listen, if it's me, I'm absolutely saying we don't think we should ever be in this range again. They went 7-9 with nothing in the cupboard last year and a new quarterback. I would absolutely slam that button. You've already been all gas this offseason. Go up, get your man there, and live long and prosper. But everyone's saying that's just not how the Patriots do business. I mean, it's been since 2000 when we watched the Patriots offseason where they did business like this. So I would like to believe anything's possible, but history is not necessarily kind to this idea.
Don't we have to take what we've seen from this year's offseason and say maybe it's time to stop talking about who the Patriots have been? Because frankly, I've said this before, but if you have the best restaurant in the world because you have the best chef ever, you can maybe get by with lesser ingredients. One day that chef leaves, now you've got a pretty good chef. You better get better ingredients. That's what they went out and did this offseason, and I think it's going to impact the draft. Why not rethink the way you do business from top to bottom now that you don't have the greatest chef of all time in your kitchen?
The Patriots as an organization, as a team, have always done one thing extraordinarily well. Reshape their identity. They got to reshape it around that great chef for a long time. Why are we thinking they won't do that now that that guy's out of the building? It seems a bit short-sighted. By the way, Jason, a little bit of trivia for you.
Oh.
Bill Belichick, obviously been around New England for quite some time now, this two-decade run, all the success. What is the highest rated, ranked, or the highest draft position he's taken a quarterback at? The highest drafted quarterback in Bill Belichick's tenure as a Patriot?
That's tough, because when I think Patriot quarterbacks, I think, you know, number one overall was Bledsoe, but that was pre-Belichick, obviously. So, I mean, is it Jimmy G?
It is. Jimmy Garoppolo, 62nd pick overall in 2014. Those are the kind of questions you're going to get around here tomorrow. There's no success. Saying success shimmy is a hard thing to say, and I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
But please don't do it.
Success shimmy.
We've got people watching on ESPN Plus. Please don't do this to them. By the way, if you want to watch something markedly better than the Fitz shimmy, which, man, I have to say that very carefully on Jason's name, we'll have three shots at Hembo tomorrow. Paul Hembakides, the Greek god of stats around here, one of our great researchers at ESPN, going to join us as he has in the past with some draft trivia to get you guys ready for the weekends. But coming up next, we got draft notes. We got big boy talk. We got D-line previews. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. Now, the reasons to find your next hire with Indeed are starting to add up. Just look at the numbers. Instant Match searches millions of resumes in Indeed's database to deliver candidates whose resumes fit your job description. They've got 135 skill tests that go beyond that resume to help you find the right candidates faster. And according to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined. So if you want to multiply your employees and subtract the hassle of finding them, visit Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Janae Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae Angola Jr., the podcast. Well, the countdown is on to the 2021 NFL Draft.
Join me, Elle Duncan, Kevin DeGani. Full coverage of the first three rounds on ESPN Radio.
Coverage begins Thursday, 7 Eastern, on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Shanahan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. We'll get you to a Kevin Love that looks like he is anything but loving his situation in Cleveland right now. That guy looks like he is miserable, and I don't know how much we should really be on him for. We'll talk about that in about 10 minutes. But, Jason, we're getting ready for the NFL draft. You and I, again, we're going to be part of the digital draft coverage for ESPN, and you and I were talking off air about this. This draft cycle especially seems super quarterback heavy to you, right?
Yeah, in a bad way. I think what's happening right now is everybody's so obsessed. They're going to move up. They're going to get quarterbacks. And suddenly you're just going to have this glut of players that are sitting there available at 12, 13, 14, 15 that I never would have imagined would be in that range.
I think it's even less about what the NFL teams are doing, because I think this year especially there's going to be a discourse between what we think we know and what we see happen. But the conversation on our side, too, once the Niners traded up to 3, it ruined everything for everybody because we were so focused on their every move, which, great pub by them. And so we thought on this show we would give everyone a little reprieve from that because we want people to walk into Thursday night with knowledge. Maybe you know what's going to happen with your team, but as you see some of these other names come off the board, give you a little understanding of where we expect some people to go, some names to watch, and guys as we get in the later rounds that could be helping your team out. Let's give you some draft notes.
Leading up until the draft, we will give you a position breakdown, but you will put your flavor on it, right, Junior?
Absolutely. Looking forward to this. We'll give you what I think is the best of each position group and someone you can watch in a later round.
Junior's draft notes.
All right, we got draft notes and our NFL draft previews brought to you by Sherwin-Williams. Ready to kick off your next painting project? Ask Sherwin-Williams. Jason. Big boy talk. You ready?
I'm so ready.
We got D lineman today. We got O lineman on Thursday. We're getting thick, quick, and nasty in here.
I like this. All right. Thick, quick, and nasty. That you should totally get t-shirts made.
We have time. Okay. We're going to talk about this off air. It's the good stuff. Let's get them started here. We're going to give you the top four, as is noted by our ESPN NFL experts, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, what the big board on ESPN has. I'm going to give you my favorite, and then we're going to give you a sleeper. Number four, Cliff.
Number four,
and this is including interior D linemen, defensive ends. We're going to start off with Ronnie Perkins from Oklahoma. Second team all Big 12 this last year for the Sooners, Jason. Really, the last couple of years, he was a freshman All-American back in 2018. And you don't normally think defense when it comes to Oklahoma, but in some instances, when we've seen them step up, especially in the last couple of years, around a young quarterback, Ronnie Perkins, big part of that.
Yeah, and you're talking about somebody that is absolutely a menace in the backfield. I would tell everybody, don't just look at his sack numbers, look at his tackle for loss numbers. Those are pretty incredible. I've seen some analysts talk about needing to develop a rush plan, which I think you're going to hear a lot over the course of the draft. And I would just tell everybody that I think that's common. You know, the more you talk about defensive linemen in college, they get one or two moves that work. They use those moves. I don't fault anybody for doing that. So one of the knocks I've heard on him multiple times is he needs a better plan. I think that comes with time. He's an absolute beast, very athletic.
That comes with learning. The one thing you always hear about rookie D linemen coming to the NFL is if you fire out Adams an offensive lineman, sell run for a second, they're going to stick like mud because they're automatically used to those instant reads. They don't yet have that developed. Number three, Cliff.
Number three
is fascinating to me, Jason. The interior D-line class, not as robust in a lot of people's mind. Christian Barmore out of Alabama, another guy that some people look at, and this tends to be the case there at a school this deep of talent at that position, but wondering if it's a little bit of a one-year wonder, a guy who really started to come on as the season went along, shined later on, an interior prospect for them, that another guy, Jason, as I look at him, can at times look a little bit stiff in the hips, at times look like he's going out there without necessarily having a great plan in the middle, but certainly great pass rush talent, just finds his way on edges and gets in the backfield.
He's one of the guys that I think are hurt by the weird offseason prepping for the draft, because if people had the opportunity to poke and prod him and get more time with him at the combine, for example, I think he would have blown up and risen. You're right. The fact that it's one solid, incredible year of work people hold against him, I don't know. That year, though, was pretty spectacular. And in a weak D-line class, he's clearly the best of the interior linemen.
That's always what makes this interesting, too, as you look and try and say, all right, if we're going to hit a cliff here, do I want to reach for value early if I'm going to need someone helping on the inside? Number two. Jalen Phillips. We're going to talk about Miami in the defensive end class this year. Greg Rousseau, who opted out for the 2020 season. Quincy Roche, the transfer from Temple that was there this last year, playing opposite of Jalen Phillips. But Jason, this is another really interesting guy. Transferred from UCLA after 3 years there, where there was some production, but certainly not what we saw this season from him. He's got some injury history. We know his career was almost ended because of concussions during his time at UCLA. But boy, does he look the part. You turn on, I watched, Jason, I went back and made the mistake of watching that North Carolina-Miami game, which, if you're a Miami fan, burn it, never look at it again. But the one player that looked like he was ready for that moment was Jalen Phillips. An unbelievable motor, all of the length that you could look for in that spot, and a guy, again, who seems like he's active enough to be molded once you start to get a better rush plan in place and be ready to go.
The only consideration I think that will hold him back is the concussion retirement. Remember, he did step away from the game because of it.
Yep.
But everybody says he's fine at this point. So how comfortable the team's going to be, that is the only question you're answering for somebody that absolutely took advantage in a COVID year where there were some opt-outs. He took advantage and said, I'm going to use this moment. I'm going to shine. He was a disruptor in every game.
He was. You always knew where 15 was, whether they were in black, green, white. It didn't matter. You could pick that guy out of the crowd, which gets us to number one.
Number one.
And I'll go spoiler, the favorite here is my favorite too, largely because of what we just talked about, the injury concerns around Jalen Phillips. Kwity Paye out of Michigan. Jason, this guy's super interesting because if you go back, there wasn't a ton of production. But as we always hear said, we draft traits and not production. And Kwity Paye was a 250-pound member of the 4x100 relay at his high school. He was a guy that was a track star. And you saw for Michigan, they lined him up all over that line there. And he just found his way around. He doesn't have, for as athletic as he is, great speed rushes yet. He doesn't have, I think, a mastery of the hand side yet. But if you want to talk about an incredibly gifted ball of clay that you can mold and use in all those different ways in these varied NFL schemes, Kwity Paye is going to be enticing to a lot of people.
Yeah, I thought, you go back and look at 40 numbers. I know they're exaggerated sometimes. Maybe we don't put a lot of emphasis on it, but when you are his size and you run a 40 and 4.57, like that is, the guy can move. And to your point, they put him everywhere, which I think at some point is a detriment to his production a little bit. If you go back 2019, he was better in 2019 than he was in 2020, but it was also such a weird year in 2020. Kwity Paye is clearly the best, I think, of the rushers, the best guy at getting at the quarterback. I thought about it when I did your mock draft of taking him for the Raiders. You look at Kwity Paye, I think you're getting somebody that, I'm not saying he's going to be a double-digit sack guy right away, but he feels like the guy that can get you 8 to 10 for a long time.
That brings us to our sleeper then, because everyone knows Kwity Paye's name in this draft, but we want to give you someone to watch in later rounds. And a lot of these were actually guys I had the good fortune of seeing during the fall. I called a lot of games in the American, called a lot of games in the MAC, and that's where I came across Peyton Turner out of Houston, the defensive end there, was a two-sport athlete in high school, was a guy that tore his ACL his senior year, and so ended up being a little more lower recruited, and so ends up committing to the hometown team, has a career with 114 tackles, 23.5 for loss, and 9.5 sacks. But Jason, 84 and an eighth inch wingspan. He's a guy that when you just look at him on tape, he actually gave me, now he's going to play out at end as opposed to the interior, big Jerry Tillery vibes. If you remember the D-tackle out of Notre Dame, long levers and a guy that really, as his career went on at Houston, started to develop and kind of lean into that body type. I think he's got the making of a guy that can be really productive for you, especially as a rotation player early on at the DN spot.
I think you make a great point. And some people have said they could put him inside a little bit here and there, but I would look at this, if your team has a lot of depth and you can let him develop, he's the sort of guy that's what he did. He got better every year at Houston, right? Like, you put him in a situation where he can develop. He's not coming out having to be the guy. Over time, he could be a great, great fit. Absolutely. And it's sort of a third round, probably, somewhere in that range.
And we know that's where you build most of the success on your team in the upcoming draft. So there you go. Our D-line notes heading into the draft. Woo! We culminate in the only place this can possibly end with the big boys, the offensive line coming up on Thursday as we get you ready for that.
I've never felt more thick than I feel right now.
Thick, quick, and nasty, Fitz.
Woo! Woo! Feels good.
My God.
Jason, I can't hide. Never mind.
I can't get the image of Jason Pitts out of my head that we'll show you in a little bit here as Jason has leaned all in on that comparison for himself. But coming up next, get to something from the hardcore. If we're talking about the Cavaliers basketball team in 2020, chances are it's not a good thing. We'll tell you what Kevin Love did next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
and Julio, Pitts or Julio? How much should the future of one of the most historically great wide receivers in Falcons history affect their fourth overall draft pick?
Julio and Pitts is so, that's like the modern Hall & Oates. Like, I love this as a band name, Julio and Pitts. Like, they put out little bops. Like, they're just sort of adult contemporary right down the middle. Your mom likes them, but you're uncomfortable admitting you like them.
Oh, okay. So I was going to ask what genre of music that was going to fit into, but adult contemporary makes sense. Something light, something easy and digestible here. Might play it at the doctor's office.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah, like, you don't need to get an elevator music version of it because it's already borderline elevator music. Like, Modern Air Supply. Just think Modern Air Supply.
Which, by the way, for Julio and Pitts, Julio Jones and Kyle Pitts, talking about that potential combination here on Shanae Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio, calling them adult contemporary, like, they have to be the most extreme form of some music, because what an adrenaline rush that would be if you put those two together. They would not be adult contemporary on the field. They would be viewer discretion advised.
Also,
you'd have to put a parental advisory sticker on that play.
They might make a really staggeringly good cop duo show, Julio and Pitts.
See, now that's more like it, because I think both of them would look really good in aviators.
Aviators, yeah. 1,000%.
That really is my only, like, basis for will you be great in a cop show is how do you look in aviators.
We should totally at some point do a ranking of offensive weapons only by what version of cop show they would be, and then we can figure out the best to the worst.
You know what, that makes a lot of sense, considering I just saw Mina Kimes the other day do a draft of quarterbacks based on how they fit into the Scoop There It Is song from the commercial. Which, so we're getting to that point in draft season. We want to get there with you. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and you know what, we're talking about that with draft season. There are some people that are fed up with their regular season period, and I think that manifests itself really interesting in Kevin Love the other day. I don't know if you've seen the highlight, Jason, but for anyone who missed it, Kevin Love late in the third quarter in a game where Cleveland was playing the Raptors. And Cleveland, they're 21-40 right now. They're not going anywhere or doing anything. This has been a team in a rebuild that Kevin Love knew he was signing up for when he signed that 5-year, $100+ million extension to stay with that team. But you see, after a couple of non-called fouls where he thought he was getting roughed up, Kevin Love gets the ball thrown to him by the official to inbound. He bats it back inbounds, frustrated, stares at the official. His teammates have no idea what's going on. Toronto grabs the ball, hits a three, and goes up 9. After the game, their coach, this team, basically said, Kevin apologized for this. We're going to try and move on from it. But, Jason, how should the rest of the team feel about Kevin Love basically punting in the middle of a game because of that?
And to me, this isn't that surprising to see these emotions boil over in what is a particularly tough year to play basketball. Like, nothing about the NBA life right now is normal. And so if you're Kevin Love and you're looking at it and saying, yeah, of course, I got my money and I signed up for a team that was going to be rebuilding. I knew this wasn't going to be easy. Now, on top of that, I'm not going to get to see anybody. I'm going to be basically isolated. I'm going to play basketball in front of no one in the process. Like, all of these things sort of are layers, and it's not any one cut. It's death by 1,000 cuts at this point. If you're Kevin Love, where you say, okay, I knew my team was going to stink. I didn't know my life was going to stink because of all of the things that factor into it. And I think that's the human side we need to remember for guys that are playing, especially on bad teams, that it's tougher and tougher to come to work every day and have some level of give a darn.
I would agree. I think it's right about extending grace given the circumstances of this season. I would say in a general sense, like, Kevin Love, he's in a tough spot because they treated this like John Cena after the game. No one else was really acknowledging this thing. They couldn't see any of it. And I think we have to remember, he's also the one with the resume in the building. Like, whether you're talking about the head coach, you're talking about the young players on this team, he's the champion who's the holdover from the glory days in Cleveland. And so he's a hard guy to check, which is why, as a veteran, you're kind of held to a different standard of, hey, man, you can't be out here just publicly not giving a damn this much. Even if I understand that, yeah, while you signed up for this Cleveland team, you signed up because they were probably going to pay you the most money there. You signed up to cash checks and play basketball. I don't know if you signed up to suck this bad in the middle of a pandemic season. I think a lot more of us would be this level of frustrated, and it's a reminder at times of the level of restraint that comes in these spots. Because, yes, you're well paid. It doesn't make, when the standard is lowered this much, any easier to swallow when you've been to the mountaintops and seen the other side of this.
Yeah, I think, and
I don't want to sound like I'm defending Kevin Love, because it was a dumb thing. He shouldn't have done it. But I'm also not going to sit here and call him petulant and wail and gnash teeth like so many people have.
I think you make a really good point about leadership expectations, especially for somebody that's in the situation that he's in. This is also a communication expectation, right? Like, you've been in locker rooms. At some point, he's got to talk to the guys and be like, hey, I blew up, and they'll understand it. The front office needs to talk to him, too, and say, hey, are we cool? Is everything good? How can we make this better? Like, everybody's got to communicate like adults, which is easier said than done, but that's what hits me on this.
It is, and honestly, if Kevin Love was in a situation where he said, all right, squeaky wheel gets the grease in the NBA, and I want to get out of here, you missed that. The trade deadline was like weeks ago, man. You got to go and pull these stunts then to get yourself out of Cleveland. You got to just stick around now and, you know, get ready and enjoy the draft. They're coming to your city and they're going to have plenty of entertainment for you there because people will be back at the draft. And coming up next, let's go to the fourth pick. Forget number three. What should the Falcons do not only with that pick but with their star receiver? Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.